everyone, and welcome to the second HDSA podcast episode. I'm Louise Vetter. I'm the president and CEO of the Huntington's Disease Society of America. And we started this podcast journey to raise awareness of the work that HDSA is doing and also showcase the relationships and amazing people who are doing fantastic work on behalf of families affected by Huntington's disease. So every month, we're going to bring you a different conversation, getting to know different members of the HDSA staff team, different global leaders in creating change for families affected by HD, and then also just to talk about things that are on our mind in terms of challenges that affect all of us in developing better treatments for HD and providing care to families every day. So really thrilled to be back again and for today's conversation with Chris Cosentino. Chris is the Director of Marketing and Communications at HDSA. He's been with the organization for a few years now. So we're going to chat about what he's seen as the HD community has evolved over the last few years. And then after talking with Chris, we're really thrilled and honored to be joined by Roby Blumenstein, who's the president of CHDI, which is a foundation dedicated to Huntington's disease, and look forward to talking with him a little bit about the land of HD drug development from where he sits. So we're excited for today's conversation. And Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Louise, we talk all the time, and I've never been more nervous to speak with you today. I mean, you're this big time podcast, host. Is there anything she can't do? I don't know.
Well, so let's be honest. I was a little reluctant about this podcast thing.
Do you listen to podcasts? Like what podcasts do you listen to?
I don't listen to podcasts. I don't.
That might not be a surprise for most people who heard the first episode.
I make this up as I go along when it comes to this podcasting.
Isn't that how we do that with a lot of the things we do? And we're building the plane in the air, right? I love the format of a podcast. It's cost effective, and it's an easy way to just chat with folks and show a little bit of personality, which I think you definitely did in that first episode, and we're only going to get better, right? So
there's nowhere to go but up, I suppose.
Yeah, we could go down too, Louise. Let's not, this could really go off the rails.
Thanks, Chris. I think we're already in danger. But no, to your point, between HDSA work and being a mom and life, there's not a lot of free time for me to listen to podcasts unless you specifically point them out and say, Louise, you got to listen to this. So I'm glad to be able to try this out and to bring conversations and relationships forward, because honestly, the best part of my day is when I get to just talk with people about what's on their mind, what's going on at the organization, what they wish we were doing more of, and really just spending time as people. So, So Chris, how did you get involved with us? I mean, I know it's been like 5 years, right? 5, 6, 7, 8? Has it been 8, 9 years?
Jesus. Louise, I'm going on 9 years at the Huntington's Disease Society of America. It's good to know that my impact has made such an impression on you that you know how long I've been at the organization.
Time slips away. It moves fast when you're having fun.
And I thought it was so funny in the first episode when you asked Eric, remember the first time we met? And there was a pause there. I don't think Eric remembered the first time he met you. How'd that make you feel? How'd that make you feel right
off? That was my worst opening question ever. Because he's like, no, Louise, you're forgettable. I don't remember. But Chris, I remember when we met, because it was a day where I got stuck in the Lincoln Tunnel coming in for my interview with you. And so that day will go down in history. I had to walk out of the Lincoln Tunnel and trek in to spend time getting to know you, and it's been a joy ever since.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that was test number one, right? To see how bad I wanted this job. And I tell you, it's been an incredible experience for me getting to know so many families, and we have such an incredible staff, and it really has, honestly, I think, made me a better person more than anything, just being able to connect with this community and share so many stories. So, but we still have a lot of work that we have to do, and we do a lot already, but there's always that not enough, right? And it's still going into 9 years with, you know, working within the community. Anytime someone says, I don't know what Huntington's disease is, it fires me up. It gets me motivated. Like, I got to do more. We got to do more. And that's the challenge that we face every day when we're trying to generate awareness and we're trying to get more people involved in this fight against HD. But yeah, it's been an incredible experience. And you know, there's definitely no signs of slowing down.
So, Chris, did you know HD before you answered an ad for HDSA?
I come from a music family, and I think the extent of me knowing about Huntington's disease was that Woody Guthrie had Huntington's disease. He died from Huntington's disease. And so, you know, the Bob Dylans and the Bruce Springsteens and, you know, so that whole Guthrie legacy of artists that came after him, you know, I always knew Huntington's disease that way. And when I first got introduced to HD and HDSA, it was really – there was a story there. There was a story that I felt like wasn't being told. And, you know, I felt like I can bring a different perspective, a different point of view to the way we tell our stories and the way we connect with local communities. And that really came out through our whole Family is Everything initiative and just sharing so many stories around that mantra, because, you know, in the battle against HD, family really is everything. And we need to know that family isn't just blood relatives, it's your community. And I think that's one of the greatest things that HDSA does. It creates this amazing community across the country and beyond, perfectly honest with you. It's we have that global you know, footprint on the work that we do, which has been amazing.
So it's not lost on me that before you joined the organization, we didn't use the phrase family is everything. That was a new tagline, a new opportunity for us to really communicate what HDSA is doing and really, you know, the impact of that families have on improving their own care and helping to push us forwards towards days when there are curative therapies for HD. You know, I'm curious sort of where Family is Everything came from, and was there time as you were getting to know the HD community that, you know, that there were sort of pivotal lessons that helped it all sort of coalesce?
I think right off the bat, I knew how important this job was to so many families that need support. And that impacted me, and I knew the weight that was on my shoulders, and I wanted to get it right. So I really did go that extra mile, I think, to really get to know who our audience is and get to know the families and speak with so many different people in the community, whether it's a family member, someone with HD, researchers, clinicians, volunteers, and just try and connect some dots, really, and just say, what is our theme here? What are we all about? Who are we, and who do we want to be? So, you know, it really started with digging into the archives and going into that Guthrie history. And, you know, I've had the fortunate opportunity to really build that incredible relationship with the Guthrie family and focus on the archives and find these amazing articles that Marjorie Guthrie had written and letters that she had wrote. And I was so inspired by that. And there's a common theme in all of her letters was family and connecting families. We need to continue to find families. And so it was an organization that was founded by families for families. And, you know, so it's, yeah, it was a discovery phase that I went through for the first, I don't know, 6 months or so, 6 months to 10 months. And, trying a few things, testing a few things, but really ever since that, we have been so data driven on the decisions that we make. We listen to the community. We look at all the comments on social media, and we really try to do the best we can to serve our families. And Family is Everything is that fight song, that mantra that I think has really been well received within the community. It's something that I was happy to kind of put together and happy to see how well received it's been.
For me, I know family is everything. Is sort of like that sentence that I can come home to, right? That sort of core of who we are. It's the why, in so many ways, and the inspiration. You reflected on that discovery phase when you first joined the organization, and I remember that first convention that you went to. I think it was Louisville. And all of the sort of immersion into the community had a heaviness about it for you. HD's hard, right?
It is. And that was definitely my first introduction to, seeing it all play out, and really understanding the magic of the HDSA convention. These are families coming from all over the world. Majority from the U.S., but we do have global guests that come, and the common thing I hear from families at convention, it's where I come from, I have no one to connect with, no one can understand what I'm going through. But when you come to the HDSA convention, there's this entire room filled of people who know exactly what I'm going through and can provide some perspective and advice, I pick that up right away. And then there's the other side of it too, where, sometimes folks will go through some episodes or challenges at convention that need assistance, and being a part of that and helping families the best we can to make sure they're comfortable and safe is super important as well. So, yeah, I think it was a combination of going to the HDSA convention the first time, and also visiting Terrence Cardinal Cook, the long-term care facility in New York City, where they have 42 bedrooms dedicated to HD residents. And, you kind of see the whole spectrum, right, of how HD impacts a person. And it was this incredible learning experience for me. And once again, we always say it, anytime we leave an experience like that, an HDSA event or a convention or anything like that, as tired as you might be from coordinating the event and working the event, it actually does the opposite to me, or and I'm sure many other people, where you can't wait to get back to work and support this community even more. So, yeah, it's a special community. It's a community that I've learned so much from, like I said, there's definitely no signs of slowing down. We're doing a lot right now as an organization. But there still needs to be a lot more, and I think we got a great staff and a great group of volunteers across the country that can continue doing great work.
Absolutely, none of us can do it alone. I know you and I lean on one another for ideas, to think big, and then to sort of bring it back down to, okay, what can we do today? Where do we need to push forward to? You mentioned how much is on our plates right now. May is HD Awareness Month. Convention every June. There's a new convention. There's a lot going on right now. Is there anything up your sleeve for this year's HD Awareness campaign? Anything that you're working on that we should know about? That I should know about?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's we've always got something up our sleeve. Obviously, we've always used the Let's Talk About HD hashtag throughout May. That has really turned into this amazing engagement platform for HD families, celebrities, influencers, anybody who wants to jump on board and use their platform to help us generate much needed awareness of this thing. So we're going to be rolling out some plans for May in the coming weeks here. Right now, we're really focused on promoting convention, getting that going. We just released the new Team Hope Walk logo, which seems like the community absolutely loves.
Well, the community helped choose it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's been, so we were able to bring a legendary graphic designer and logo creator on board, Todd Radom, who does a lot of stuff with, he does a lot of work with Major League Baseball and the NFL so we were able to get them, and we're real happy with the final result there.
Yeah, I think the Team Hope logo, and it should be noted that, you know, Todd came to us with a lot of donated inspiration, right? You know, he knows we're a relatively small organization, and he was really motivated to help our cause and to put in that extra time to come up with a creative logo that could tell the story and also help Team Hope evolve from just being a walk program to being, you know, walk, run, and ride. And really that Team Hope is, you know, any community-based activity that brings folks together to raise awareness of HD. So I think it looks great. I'm looking forward to my new t-shirt.
Yeah.
And to all that May will bring in terms of storytelling and then convention. Have you ever been to New Orleans, Chris?
I have not. I am excited. And I think there's also this incredible excitement throughout the community. We see it on social media surrounding convention, and it's, you know, we're finally going to be back with no restrictions as far as capacity goes. And it's going to be that convention that we've always seen, you know, prior to the pandemic. And, you know, I love convention. It's a lot of work. It's a beast putting together and coordinating and all that. But just to see the families and the hugs and the tears and all that, it's there's nothing like it. There really isn't. And you know, I think this year it's gonna be bigger and better than ever before, to be honest with you.
I think we're all feeling that energy, right? You know, that we had planned to go to New Orleans in 2020. Took us a few years to be able to get back to there. But, you know, hosting 1,000 people is a huge undertaking. But to your point, it's not just the educational and research programming. It is all of the social side of convention. It is that togetherness, which I think especially as we finally put COVID-19 and the pandemic in the rearview mirror, that's what we're hearing more and more, is just that, you know, folks are so grateful to be able to come together, to share those hugs, to learn and lean on one another. So yeah, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, I mean, we have this incredible agenda, right, of sessions that folks go to. But the thing that I notice, as great as those sessions are, they're led by world-class, you know, HD experts. I think the most important part of the HDSA convention are those breaks when families get to come out of a session and connect with other families and share some ideas on what, you know, a session they might have heard, or you know, and they have these personal conversations off to the side, and that's the magic, you know. And even in our exhibit hall, when they start building relationships with our great partners and the sponsors that are at convention, it is such an incredible event. This collaboration, this camaraderie, you know, I'm definitely looking forward to it.
But so I hear us talking about convention, right? And I realize that the vast majority of folks who might be listening can't come to convention for a variety of reasons. It is one special event that we host every year. And HDSA is way more than convention. We are absolutely, you know, a network of families advocating for one another and pushing us forward. But I know, you know, you work really hard with Minnelli and Perez and so many. Did I say Minnelli and Perez? She's like two people.
She is two people.
She is two people. Minnelli Perez. Everyone knows Minnelli. Not my Nelly. Minnelli.
Our Nelly.
My Minnelli. She's so going to edit this out right now. It makes me laugh. But, you know, a lot of the work that you and Minnelli are supporting is on our social media, on our website, so that folks can, you know, find resources and connections. And I'd love your thoughts on how HDSA.org can continue to evolve, because it can't be static, right?
No, not at all. I mean, and I think every website, it's this living, breathing thing that you got to continually update and. So we are always making edits and updates to the website. The thing that is a challenge for us, it's a great thing that we do, but it's also a challenge for us. We do so much, right? There's so much that we do, and it's our responsibility as a marketing communications team, as an organization, to make sure that all of our resources are getting that equal love, that equal airtime. And it's so the navigation of the website and the user experience is something that we're really focused on this year. And we're going to be introducing some new navigation tools to help folks when they come to HDSA.org. They will have a better experience finding the resources that they need, answers to the questions that they might have. So we're really focused on the navigation of the site right now. But there's going to be some other improvements to the site as the year goes on that, like I said, we'll just improve the overall experience of visiting HDSA.org. And, so it's, like I said, there's a ton of stuff on there and it's constantly being updated. We're continuing to improve.
I think that just illustrates something that we try and apply across the organization, which is that challenge to continue to innovate, that we can't rest on our laurels. We always have to be looking at different ways to connect with families, to support families, and to tell our story. And I really appreciate your persistence in that stuff, Chris.
Because all right. It does. I appreciate that you appreciate that, Louise. That means a lot to me.
You're welcome. But wait, I can't let this go. I know we need to wrap up so I can move on to my next guest. But there's something that you have said a few different times that I want to jump into a little bit, just because I think that our listeners would enjoy understanding a little bit more. You've mentioned a few times in our conversation that you've personally learned things being here at HDSA that you're able to take back and apply to your world. And I'm just curious if there's either an experience or a lesson that you can think of and maybe share that helps put that in perspective for folks.
I think working in the rare disease space, specifically Huntington's disease, you develop this sense of grit. And there's this, we can have an initiative or a campaign that does well, maybe even exceeds expectations. We can have an event that exceeds expectations. But that next conversation is, okay, how do we make it even better? How do we stay hungry? How do we keep growing as an organization? How do we keep growing as professionals? And I think that's something that, obviously when you build relationships with families throughout the HD community, I've heard researchers talk about it as well. Once they build, really, they don't want to stop. They're in that lab and they're working even harder just because of the relationships they built. And that really emphasizes the importance of storytelling, effective storytelling, and making sure folks know the struggles that families are having and the help that they need. So I think as a whole, the number one thing that I've learned, the skill that I've acquired is grit and just never settling and never being satisfied with any certain sense of accomplishment, because there's, even though an event did well, there's still families of, still fighting this thing and we're not done fighting and we're never going to stop fighting. So, and that kind of attitude and has definitely carried over into my personal life, professional life. Just getting to know families is I feel made me a better husband and a better father. Like I said, this has been such an experience that has changed me personally and professionally. And, everyone in my circle knows about Huntington's disease because that's all I talk about. And we've been able to put some events together that, got my circle involved and just imagine, if everybody did this, did that, and there are a lot of people doing it, but what if we continue doing that? Like, everyone just focus on your community, focus on your circle, get them involved. It's just going to help the fight even more. So, we hop off this recording right now, it's back to work, taking on multiple projects and, making sure the volunteers are supported and most importantly, making sure families know where the resources are to help them navigate their journey.
You say back to work like this isn't work. But honestly, I think when you and I are talking, we try and keep it fun and light and look at different ways that we can challenge one another, right? And challenge the organization, challenge our community to just push forward. And I think that is a lot of the grit that we bring to this. And yeah, Chris, thank you for everything over 9+ years, but also for this conversation. I feel like my next interview should be with your wife to find out if you really are applying HDSA family lessons at home. But maybe that's not an HDSA podcast. Maybe that's my next career.
Hey, listen, the way you're going right now with this thing, you can, you know, this is just the beginning of your podcasting journey. So just keep doing what you're doing. I'm proud of you.
Just the beginning. Chris Cosentino, HDSA Director of Marketing and Communications and other stuff, king of grit and music lover. Thank you so much for this conversation and for all that you do.
Thank you.
All right. All right. My second guest today on this podcast is Roby Blumenstein. Roby is the president of CHDI. And Roby, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Not a lot of folks know what CHDI is. So even as I introduce you, it occurs to me that that for most folks, CHDI is just a list of letters. Can you maybe tell us a little bit about what CHDI is and sort of how you got involved?
Sure. So CHDI is a private foundation that's exclusively dedicated to in helping develop treatments for Huntington's disease. So I'm going to unpack that with a couple of things, and I'm going to tell you where the CHDI comes from last. So first of all, because we're a private foundation, it's a little bit different than HDSA, which has to raise money. What it means is we have some private donors that provide all the funds we need to do our activities. So we really don't have a fundraising operation or accept money from outside people. And we're pretty much exclusively devoted to enabling scientific activities, which means when we want, when we want to do things with the HD patient and family community, we don't do it ourselves. We do it together with HDSA. So CHDI has a staff of about 120 people now. About half of them are scientists. A third of them are program managers, and the rest are overhead people like me that, you know, try to keep the thing running. And we support all kinds of research around the world, you know, the things you usually think of like academic investigators, but we also are scientists direct activities at contract research organizations, which are companies that actually have labs and benches and do experiments, and we do some stuff there. And we also work together with a lot of the biotechs and pharmaceutical companies you've heard of that are working on Huntington's disease to help them. And the overall theme is that we're collaborative enablers. And what that means is we're not out to compete with people to find treatments. We're here to enable, to help people, you know, when they need, you know, when there's things that we can do that maybe individual companies or academics can't do, we try to fill those gaps. CHDI comes from, this is sort of distant mist of history. There was a program at the Hereditary Disease Foundation called the Cure Huntington's Disease Initiative, CHDI. And 20 years ago, the organization I work for sort of took that over for a variety of reasons and as an homage to the founders of that at HDF, we called the foundation CHDI Foundation, but it doesn't stand for anything. It's just an homage.
So you heard it here first, folks. CHDI actually did mean something, but now it really is just a powerful set of four letters. Thank you for explaining that, Roby. And, for answering what I think has been one of the many mysteries in the community. I love the concept of collaborative enablers, and it touches upon something that you said about CHDI not being patient-facing, not being family-facing, and how you work with HDSA. And I think that just speaks to the fact that this fight against Huntington's disease can't be done by just one organization or one group of people. It's a collaboration. and we all enable one another. HDSA can't do the types of research that CHDI is able to participate in. And so we have our focus in other places. And that's the same with other HD organizations like the Huntington Study Group, the Hereditary Disease Foundation, Help for HD. There are different groups, each with our own voice and contribution to this space. But, you know, it occurs to me that we met over 14 years ago and some of my earliest conversations thinking about what my journey helping families affected by HD would look like. And a lot has changed since then. So, you know, I wonder, and it's hard sometimes to sort of, you know, put your finger on how something has changed. But when you think back 14, 20 years, what's different in the field of HD science today than back then?
Well, I'd single out a couple of things at least. You know, first of all, the quality is not the right word. The sophistication of the science has increased tremendously. You know, 20 years ago, I think the way the community was working on it was there were some academic investigators with the best intentions would say, oh, look, we're going to give this thing to a mouse like CoQ10 or creatine. And it looked like the mouse got better. And they said, okay, let's go do a trial in people. And there were trials in people of those kinds of things. And today we know that's low probability of success because we really don't understand what's going on in the disease. Today we know so much more about Huntington and about why, you know, we have very strong hypotheses about why it's late onset and the importance of allele selectivity and you know in some cases and things like that, which allow us to do much more bespoke approaches to therapeutics. Like we're attacking, we know more about the problem, so we know how to attack it. So that's one huge change over the last 20 years. The other is, and it's a little bit related, I think there's been a big shift from thinking about the disease in mice, because mice and other models, flies, pigs, sheep, you know, we have them all, zebrafish, they don't really naturally have Huntington's disease. Only people do. So the importance of data and information derived from people with Huntington's disease to the research effort has gone way, way up. So, for example, you know, there's a whole big field now you may have heard about somatic expansion, which is the idea that the CAG tract a person is born with, say, you know, it's 41, which is, you know, is a length that would cause the disease in a normal lifetime. But it's actually in the person with 41, it's expanding over their life while they're living, and that the number that may be pathogenic is higher. So a whole new therapeutic approach is saying, oh, maybe we can control that expansion and delay or even prevent, you know, the eventual onset of symptoms in a person. That insight was completely derived from genome-wide association study conducted in people. It's not something that could be done in the models. And it's because there's, I forget the number now, it's like 15,000 people have donated their DNA that we're able to see these things. So, as I say, I think the shift from thinking about the disease in animals to thinking about the disease in people has been really big and really important over the last 20 years. Of course, that's, you know, something that's where HDSA comes in. It's also
absolutely. I think it does show a sophistication in understanding of the disease, right? That it's no longer sort of testing hypotheses and in things that man creates, but actually looking at Huntington's where it exists naturally. It's why HDSA.
Now, of course, it's a lot harder because there's a lot of things you can do to animals that you can't do to people. So we have to be, you know, we have to be clever about what the experiments are that we can do, you know, in order to get the information.
But it's so much more valuable information, right?
Exactly.
You know, so I think, you know, all things considered, there is a time and a place for mice and rats and fruit flies and all the other things. But I think that the potential sort of payoff, right? The quality of the things we learn from human biology has such direct correlation to what we're trying to do to develop disease-modifying therapies and lessen the burden of Huntington's disease.
It's actually changed how we think about models. You know, it used to be because the genetics in mice and those kinds of models is so easy, we thought, oh, we'll make a mouse that has Huntington's. But that isn't, you know, maybe that's not the right way to think about it. It's more like the people have Huntington's. And now we have to think about what's the right way to build a model that reflects what's happening in people. And what that means is, you know, there's no model that exactly has Huntington's like people do. But for different aspects of the disease, we can build good models. But we know only to use them for the purpose for which they're built. So the idea that, you know, you hear about this was cured in a mouse, it's not really a meaningful expression, at least in our community anymore, which is good because it means we're focusing on what's important.
So models are important, but also just data, right? And so, you know, you mentioned GWAS, the Genome-Wide Association Study that Marcy McDonald has talked about at HDSA sessions over the years. And it's widely known to just have added a huge new layer of insight, right, into the field and the potential for therapeutic targets. But another big data project is Enroll-HD. And I sometimes feel that if folks know CHDI, it's because they've heard this connection between CHDI and Enroll-HD, which just recognized 10 years of amazing global participation of HD families. Can you talk to those who may not be familiar with Enroll-HD, sort of what that observational platform is and why it's important?
Sure. So it's great that you already identified it as a platform. So Enroll-HD grew out of a couple of sort of traditional prospective observational studies. One was in the U.S. called Cohort that some people listening may have participated in. The other was in Europe called Registry, both of which were efforts to follow people with Huntington's to see how the disease developed over time. And 10 years ago, actually more than 10 years ago, but the first patient 10 years ago, we decided to combine these two trials into one big one and also kind of to stop thinking about it as a trial or a study, but more as a platform that enables other activities. So the people come in to enroll every year. They provide information about themselves, phenotypic information, how they're feeling, how they're functioning. And we collect samples like blood from which we can get the DNA. And in fact, it's because of Enroll and the samples that were collected in Enroll that Marcy's GWAS study was able to be conducted so quickly. So, you know, normally if you wanted to go out and get 15,000 samples, it would take years and years and years. But because of Enroll, we already had the samples before we decided to do the study. In fact, we do it in waves. So we're continually, you know, every time we collect a new bunch of samples, we send them out to have the DNA sequence, and then they redo the GWAS looking for more things. And it's sort of become a virtuous circle. And in fact, one of the things we're thinking about now is whether we should, the time is right to whole genome sequence everybody in Enroll. So that'd be like 20,000 people. And it's, you know, even in more depth than a GWAS, you just know their entire genomes would be a fantastic resource. So Enroll is this platform that, again, enables things like the GWAS, but also other studies in many different ways. So, for example, you know, the search for biomarkers to tell is a drug effective is very important. So built on top of Enroll is a study called HD Clarity, where some people who are willing to do so donate cerebrospinal fluid samples. We don't need that from 20,000 people, but it'd be great to have it from a couple thousand people. So we use the infrastructure that already exists from Enroll in order to do that kind of collection much more quickly than we otherwise would. Another example would be some of the big interventional studies that were conducted by Roche and Novartis and Wave. Because we know the people who are in Enroll, and we've characterized them, we know things about them, we can help those companies recruit really quickly because they tell us what kind of people, the characteristics of the people they're looking for. And we can tell them, okay, you want these countries, go to these sites. We can provide the sites with lists of the people. We don't know who they are, but we have numbers, and tell the site investigator, call up these people because they match the criteria that Roche is looking for. And the study recruits really quickly. Like, I've been told that the Tom and Erson study, the Gen HD1, was the quickest recruiting study in Roche history because of that. So in many different ways, enroll enables all kinds of other activities.
I've heard that too from Roche, and I like to think it was a combination of Enroll HD and also HDSA and other groups helping to make sure that that families knew how to get involved and how
exciting
it would be, you know? So, you know, it's interesting when you mentioned Enroll HD, and I did deliberately use the word platform because I think that's what makes Enroll HD something that HDSA endorsed. And HDSA doesn't endorse things. We know that, right? And most of the community knows that endorsement comes with sort of a lot of expectation and implications. And so we try not to do that. But when the HDSA Board of Trustees had those early conversations with you about the potential for Enroll HD to really transform care and research, it was, you know, a really important thing that we wanted to support in a different way. So so that's how we endorsed Enroll HD. And it's really exciting just to see the impact of the data. You mentioned something about the data being de-identified. And I think it is important because it's something that we talk a lot about with the community, that anonymity is protected. So this isn't data that's being sold for somebody to make money off of and try and connect you back to your individual files. This is data that is completely anonymized, de-identified in a way that can inform everybody's work, right?
So I think what you're driving at, the answer is yes, but I think we have to be really careful about the use of the terms.
Okay.
So, and the way we like to call it is coded. And one of the reasons we say coded and not anonymized or de-identified is because there's a really interesting and important feature of Huntington's, which is that it's really a lifetime disease. You know, under the new staging system, which is for research purposes, you know, Huntington's is defined as something that starts with birth if you're born with 40 or more CAGs. And what that means is that people with Huntington's disease, we call PWHDs now, is the new lingo for how we describe people, PWHDs. Over their lifetime, they may go into different trials. You know, they may be in an interventional trial, they may be in Enroll, they may be in HD Clarity, they may go to help develop a PET ligand, like all kinds of different things. And We want to be able to connect the data that that person has provided in different places so that we know that it's them, okay? Not who they are, but it's them. So the HD community has this thing called the HDID, which is a unique identifier, which is made up in the computer and can't be reverse engineered, but that allows us to connect data about someone that was collected in different studies without knowing who they are. And that's really important to develop a picture of Huntington over a lifetime. So it's not correct to say it's anonymized because it's not. It's de-identified in some ways, okay, but it's not. It's definitely coded so we can connect the data. But the issue of privacy is really important. So first of all, CHDI and Enroll itself does not have the information about who the people are. All we know is that HDID number and the associated data and biosamples. Furthermore, when we give it out, we only have it in that way. We can only give it out in that way. But on top of that, we make people promise, you know, it's part of the data use agreement. We say, you want to use this data, you have to agree to these terms. And one of the key promises is they won't use it to try to identify the participants. So we try to be careful about that.
That is appreciated. Thank you. I always say words matter. And I think that this example provided a lot of insight into why words matter, but also the potential and practices behind Enroll HD. So thank you. Changing topics a little bit, I got an email yesterday from the airline saying that my flight to Croatia has changed again. And that's my my segue into the fact that CHDI holds an annual therapeutics conference that is a must attend for clinical science leadership around the globe and patient advocacy organizations and also corporate partners in this space. So, you know, it's usually limited attendance, but it's an incredibly powerful meeting that HDSA always makes a point to attend. Usually it's in California. Once in a while, you put it overseas. And I know this year it's in Dubrovnik. You know, I know that agenda is still coming together and there's usually hot topics that sort of slip in under the radar, but what are you looking forward to in this year's therapeutics conference? Can you tell us, or is it all too hush-hush?
Well, you know, like on the one hand, I kind of feel that there isn't a lot from CHDI's point of view, not a lot of breaking news because we're working with so many people. So, you know, we're arranging the speakers. We know what they're going to talk about. On the other hand, it's just, you know, we kind of lucked into a great setup for our conference when we started having it out in California in Palm Springs. And we sort of have it at this kind of campus place where we take over the whole place. And it's so nice, nobody leaves. So it's sort of the discussions that are taking place between the sessions are just as important as the sessions themselves, because a lot of people involved in HD research are there. And there's a lot of you know, projects and collaborations and discussions that take place, and I think in some ways that's the most important part of the conference, just sort of building the scientific community and enabling that kind of scientific interchange as they hear about the presentations. Now, you know, there's, you know, it's timing that I can't affect, but I think Prelenia is going to read out, I think PTC is going to read out, you know, sometime in the first half of this year. And I hope it's by the time of the conference, so the people are there and we can hear what they have to say.
If it's not by the therapeutics conference, then we hope they can share it at the HDSA convention in New Orleans this year. So it's nice that there's an additional.
I'm going to twist people's arms so they do it at our place.
Yeah, yeah. And I try and twist their arms if they do it at conventions.
You know what? They should do it. It's really a question of both places because they're really different audiences, right? So it's not. And again, that's. That's kind of the spirit about this enablement, collaboration. It's not really one or the other.
Yeah. No, and that is so true. And they're incredibly different audiences. Yeah. I think to your point about the therapeutics conference, the content of the sessions are powerful, but the reason that I go every year is for the relationship and the stewardship stuff that happens in all of the sessions. It is almost without fail, the busiest week on my calendar, just because from the minute you wake up, you run into somebody in the gym that you're going to start talking with about something that's going on all the way through, you know, sort of the after dinner libation. So it's a full calendar, but all of it is incredibly important to strengthening that field and that connectivity of the clinical community working in HD. So yeah, it's a good meeting. And then what's shared there often finds its way into the HDSA Research Day at convention, which is exciting. So one more thing that I'm hoping we can talk about, I know we're running long, but this is just such a great conversation, is that CHDI's partnership with HDSA is longstanding. You've been, a meaningful partner in so many ways, supporting HDSA's research programs, somebody that I know I can call and bounce ideas off of when we're thinking about different ways to make a difference in this fight. And that's so valued. Another way that CHDI contributes is how you endorse and encourage, endorse being a loaded word, encourage patient engagement. And I know that CHDI has supported the HD Coalition on Patient Engagement, HD COPE. I'm just curious your thoughts on how patient engagement strengthens drug development, because that's something that we feel at HDSA, we're always telling that story. And I'm just curious what it means to you.
Well, you know, patient engagement is family engagements, you know, is very important to the whole process, right? You know, as I already explained, you know, right back to the beginning of the research, you need people engaged. At the same, because that's just going to make things go faster. If we can recruit trials faster get them over with. You know, that's when drugs get into the pharmacy, you know, at the end of trials. And so engagement in that sense is super important. Also having an understanding of what's important in a treatment for what's important to the patients in what a treatment does. Now, I must say, you know, in Huntington's, unfortunately, like, it's early days. And I think all of us would probably say, we'll take anything that makes a difference right now. But as time goes by, there's going to be, and as we learn more about Huntington's and how to approach it and tackle it, there's going to be hopefully like nuance and alternatives. You know, we could go this way and treat this, or, you know, try and affect this or affect that. And I think it doesn't matter what doctors think, doesn't matter what pharmaceuticals, it's what patients think that's really important. So I think gearing up to provide that input. And at the same time, you know, it's a two-way street. The same way patients can have input into, you know, drug development, the science and drug development, I think it's important for, you know, the patients who participate in that to get an understanding of how the drug development process works and reflect that back to the larger community. Because some things that are desirable are very hard to do today, and maybe not the first thing that should be done. So I think the key thing about HD COPE and the larger community is it's not a one-way street. It's a two-way street. And so the more patients inform drug developers about how they feel about the disease and what's important, and the more the drug developers can convey to patients the issues they face and how they have to do things and what, you know, what would make a difference to them in terms of accelerating their efforts, you know, is a big win-win.
Absolutely. Well said. The reality is that we make progress when everyone's talking and listening to one another, right? And so, and we all know that for PWHDs, for families affected by HD, there's no time to waste. So we need to all work together. So Roby, thank you so much for being a part of this podcast, for carving out a little bit of time. This episode is actually going to air on Rare Disease Day. So we're grateful to be able to talk about this partnership in helping to fight this rare disease. So thanks again. I'll see you in Croatia, if not before. It's for those who don't know, the CHDI offices are only a stone's throw from the HDSA offices, but the world is so busy that we never see one another. So
people are welcome to come by and say hello.
A private nonprofit with their doors wide open. I love it. So thank you, Roby. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it was great to talk with you. Thanks, everybody, for listening to this second episode of HDSA's podcast. I have no idea what we're doing for episode number 3. So stay tuned, and thanks again for tuning in. Have a great day, everybody.